Good afternoon and welcome to Season 5, Episode 25 of You Call That Radio's audio podcast. And this is the news, the show where we grab some of the best bits from our YouTube channel and sew them all together like a big woolly jumper. A big woolly jumper with no adverts to get the audio podcast listeners through the festive period. It'll go well with some turkey sandwiches, an eggnog. I don't actually know what eggnog is, but if you do, then pour yourself a glass of eggnog. If it's a drink, I think it's a drink. It'll probably go down well with today's show, where we'll be analysing some of the headlines over the last month, including Shirley Manson and the beach ball incident, a hot take about why Scotland took so long to qualify for the World Cup. Couple of reviews. We're going to review the new P. Diddy documentary that 50 Cent made and the film I Swear. Brilliant film. So, going to talk about that. Going to talk about the explosion of shite Oasis tribute acts, the future of Radio Scotland, and the death of Ticket Town. There is absolutely no adverts on this show, thanks to the generosity of our Patreons. So to keep this show ad-free, please consider buying us a coffee at ko-fi.com/YouCallThatRadio or joining the Patreon gang at patreon.com/YouCallThatRadio, where we have bonus content, guest lists, discounts and other things. There will be no adverts at any point, but I think the next bit falls under news. My band, the Gyro Babies, just announced our last ever gig at the Art School on March the 28th. Tickets are on schedule. I also just released my first ever book, which is called If By Magic, Words and Lore of the Gyro Babies. It's out now in Waterstones, Amazon, eBay and all the bookstores. Or you can grab one from me directly on Bandcamp or go to Salamander Street Publishing's website. I'll probably do a separate show about those two things, but I thought I'd give you a wee heads up because I know some of you guys don't always use social media and I don't want you to go, why didn't you say that you're doing a last gig, or why didn't you say you've released a book? So I've told yous. But anyway, I hope Santa's good to you and I hope you enjoy the show. This is the news. Radio. You call that radio? What's he doing? I thought he threw a beach ball onto the stage, but he was just standing there. And then that happens. Oh shit, this is the news on You Call That Radio. So I've been asked by a patron for my thoughts on Shirley Manson and the beach ball incident. The person has asked to remain anonymous because, well, you know. So cheers, mystery patron, as long as you're alright. As a fan of Shirley Manson, let's just break it down. Let's go back to where it all began a few days ago in Australia.
Like this, like it literally makes me want to fucking beg people to go over there and punch you in the face. Oh, you're getting rid of the balloon now? Yeah, you big fucking dudes. Wow, oh my God, you're so cool. It's just so fucking outrageously cool. I can't go over it.
Yeah. Wow.
It's disrespectful and musicians have had enough. And we're fed up of not getting fucking paid properly and fed up of having to play for douchebags like you. You're a fucking middle-aged man in a fucking ridiculous hat and you're a fucking fuckface. And I literally want to fucking ask people to punch you in the fucking face. You know what? I'm a lady, so I won't. But if truly,
violence is not the answer.
I would love to send my crew over to fucking mess you up, but you know what? I won't, because I pity you, because you're a small man with a small dick. Good night, angel face.
So my first thoughts were, it's a bit over the top, especially since I found out that the guy didn't throw a beach ball. I thought he threw the beach ball, but he was just standing there with a beach ball. But touring will drive you mad. And sometimes on stage, you get into character and say things you don't really mean. It's nothing that an apology couldn't fix. She didn't apologise. Not yet, anyway. She doubled down with a tweet. It seems that beach balls genuinely do really piss her off, and she finds it disrespectful. I don't know if she's just doing a bit, if she's got shares in Big Beach Ball to sell beach balls. I don't know. It feels like I'm missing something. I've enjoyed many a show. Flaming Lips, Colin Mustard, even Metallica have beach balls. And most festivals you go to, you'll see beach balls in the crowd, and I can't find the link between beach balls and Spotify. I don't find it an insult to the music community. But I feel like we're missing something here. So, shoutouts to Blunt Magazine. They actually spoke to the beach ball guy. So hopefully he can make it make sense.
I did see in the video that we saw this morning where you were having a bit of a laugh, but it wasn't long after that that it actually got a bit dark, and she actually spoke about whether she would entice the fans to potentially be violent on you, and then she talked about potentially the crew getting her crew to come and mess you up or something like that.
That's exactly what she said.
At that moment, you must have felt a little bit of fear then, at least enough to sort of check your surroundings. How were you feeling?
I mean, I've been a hospitality worker for a very long time as well, a good 20-odd years, and you sort of know big crowds and you're sort of scanning for trouble here and there. But when it happened, the second attack, in a way, was shock a little bit, and I felt hurt that one of my artists that I've loved for over 25, 30 years, seen numerous times, had just said that to me and singled me out and made me feel very small and a bit afraid, especially I don't know how big a crew out that wanted to come and mess me up. Or the other part of this violence part that was scary was she trying to turn the crowd onto me. Was someone going to just blindside punch me out?
Yeah, that's not good. It's not good. The guy is called Gig Pig. He's been going to garbage shows for over 30 years. After all of this, he asked the sound engineer for the set list as a souvenir. And then he went home and listened to a rare garbage demo CD. So he's a big fan, and he also said that he didn't want anyone to orchestrate a hate campaign, and he was still a fan. So he's definitely taking the higher ground. He seems like a likeable guy. He loves his music, and he was just genuinely shocked. But he did say if anyone wants to maybe write Gig Pig on the back of a beach ball for the next gig. So we just for the Good Things Festival, tours over various cities in Australia. I think Tool play it, I think Weezer play it. So yeah, there's more to come. There had to be another gig, and Shirley Manson does address it once more as the crowd throw some beach balls in the air.
Very impressive, and not only are they impressive, but they are very, very big. So the only thing that kind of shocks me a little is that there's been more fuss made about me offending beach balls than there has about 20,000 Palestinian kids. I would just like to remind you all what actually is important in this life. And maybe a beach ball brings you joy, and for that I apologise. If I upset you about your blessed beach balls, I humbly apologise.
Interestingly, you might have heard that the Daily Mail cut the bit out where she was talking about the genocide of innocent Palestinian civilians, and she does make a good point in that. She has used her platform to speak for the people of Palestine. She's used her platform to speak out against Spotify and streaming culture in general. And she's right, there is more important things going on in the world. I've also seen a clip of her sticking the finger up at the paparazzi at the airport, which is fine. Why? You're in the middle of travelling, you've had a bad week, and you're tired in an airport, and you've got some tabloid guy wanting to speak to you. That's fine to stick the finger up at them as well. So in conclusion, I think she was in the wrong. I think she realised she was in the wrong when she saw a flock of beach balls in the crowd. And she really needed to walk it back, because this is like the Barbra Streisand effect. If you keep saying you hate beach balls, then more people will turn up with beach balls. She shouldn't have threatened the guy with violence. I know she was joking, but she does have some obsessed fans who might have followed that up with a smack to the face of the beach ball guy. It's very strange. I'm still not convinced this isn't a PR stunt or somehow, because it doesn't make sense. We've not really got to the point that this is an insult. It's disrespectful to have a beach ball. It blows my mind. I don't get it. So she did a bad thing. She seemed to see the funny side in the end. Shout out to the Australian crowd for bringing their beach balls and taking the piss a little. That seems like a fair response. And fuck the Daily Mail and the likes for following around and editing out the part about the genocide of the Palestinian people. I now look forward to a festival next summer where you can get Garbage, the Flaming Lips, Colonel Mustard and Metallica. Call it Beach Ball on the Beach or something. Someone make it happen. And overall, I don't mind rock stars acting like rock stars from time to time, even when they get it badly wrong. It keeps it interesting. The beach ball guy has forgiven her. Hopefully she will sign his beach ball next time they're in Australia, if they go back, which they might not. Who knows? But that's what I think. What do you think? And if you're a patron, if you call that radio, then let me know in the comments what I should cover next. This is the news. Bye, radio. You call that radio? What's he doing? What you witnessed there was the tiredest man on the planet reacting to Scotland qualifying for the World Cup. I then instantly slept for 12 hours before waking up to check that it hadn't all been a dream. Things like that don't happen to us. We're supposed to squeeze through to the playoffs, then lose to a last-minute goal. It's been nearly 30 years. 1998 was the last time we made it to the World Cup finals. I remember it. I was a child, but I remember it. John Collins scored against Brazil by a penalty, if I remember rightly. And we were 1-0 up on the opening game of the World Cup. And there was some buzz. But I want to talk about this to you call that radio listeners, and for the audio podcast listeners, for the YouTube viewers. And I want to explain why it's bigger than football. Because I know some of yous either aren't Scottish or some of yous are Scottish, but you don't give a shit about football. Well, growing up, our generation was treated to role models such as comedy drunk Rab C. Nesbitt, shady smack addicts in EastEnders, and occasionally a high-grade police detective that helped kind of perpetuate our dour and sometimes stingy stereotypes. The stereotypes were strong on television, always were, very rarely on television. And when we were on television, we were there to play a role with a weird accent. And it's my belief that British television was single-handedly responsible for the Scottish cringe and the reason we are the only country ever to vote against our own independence. Scottish cringe is a phenomena where people get angry when we hear our own accent on English or American TV show. There's actually some good podcasts about this on this channel that we just dropped recently. You can get it on YouTube or on Apple, Spotify and stuff, called Beyond the Cringe that Jim Monahan hosted. But yeah, from my take is that sometimes I think the Scottish cringe is because it's a weird impression of what a director thinks that Scots should sound like. And sometimes it's a lot deeper than that, because we know as soon as we hear the accent, we're about to be the butt of the joke. You know, like the Austin Powers, the fat bastard guy. Or we're about to commit a crime. Or maybe even solve a crime. But it's going to make us a grass on some level. There's going to be a catch. We're never a proper hero. There's no real role model for us. So, as a result, this means that people are happy to rely on Westminster to tell us what to do as they plunder our natural resources. Our language, our land, and our confidence is so low that we happily clip the wings off of anyone that starts to get ideas above the station. And I like that sometimes. This is a superpower. When it comes to some millionaire fanny who's showing off his fancy car, we're not going to allow that. But many times, we stop our own friends from pursuing their dreams. You know, if they pick up a guitar and try to play one of their own songs, we say things like, play Wonderwall. We bam everyone up who tries to do something different. Even using fancy words. Even speaking too loud or properly could get you into trouble. Meanwhile, at school and job interviews, you are told that you must speak properly. But in a scheme environment, it has zero advantages. So kind of stuck in this loop of self-loathing, a vicious cycle of shite. Now, I'm very well aware of the bread and circuses argument towards sports in general. And we could go on about that all day long. We're not going to get into that today. But you cannot deny that this country has received a boost this week. We don't normally score overhead kicks or chip Danish goalkeepers from the halfway line in the 97th minute. That is for the others. And now we have ideas above our stations again. There's a feeling. There's people putting money on it. Scotland to win the World Cup. The ideas are way above our stations. There's a feel-good factor. Travel bookings are spiking to USA, Mexico, Canada. I don't even think anyone knows where it's going to be yet exactly. There's a football shirt sales rise. And people all over the world are Googling Scotland and checking out the goals online. And I've never been to the United States. I have no plan to, considering its current states. I don't know a lot about Canada, apart from I think I've got a third cousin that lives over there that maybe I should hit up. I do know a lot about Mexico, though, having lived there briefly. And I was really surprised that, you know, normally when you go to a European destination and you say, oh, no, I'm not English, I'm Scottish, you get quite a good reaction to that. But in Mexico, people didn't really know what Scotland was. You know, even in Jordan, people knew Braveheart. In Mexico, it was a bit different. The only people who really understood Scotland in general, was middle-aged people who were into rave culture. So the reason for that is that Trainspotting was a massive underground success in Mexico in the late 90s, early 2000s. Where the Marqueta sold VHS and DVDs of Trainspotting. It was very popular. So certain people were excited to hear I was from Scotland, but only a small niche, the hedonism niche, the people late night raves and stuff like that. But in general, nobody really knew what Scotland is. And the World Cup is a big stage. And whether we win it or we get pumped in every game, this is an opportunity to remind the world that we exist and that we are not England.
And I'm not a flag-waving patriot who's proud of just because I was born on a certain bit of land. But I love to see an underdog do good. And it's nice to see an underdog doing well with a similar accent from a similar place. And I'm passionate about the many overlooked Scottish artists. And I would like to move away from whatever the fuck Keir Starmer is doing politically as soon as possible. And that's before Nigel Farage takes over and turns it fully into a far-right fascist state. And to all my friends in England, love, only love for you guys. And to all the English in Scotland, love, only love too. But it just feels like it's time to not do what Westminster tells us to do anymore. And I think a breakup would be good for everyone. We'd both hit the gym, get a haircut, get our nails did, and we can all stay pals, be good neighbours, and occasionally get a drink together. I just think that there is no authenticity, accountability, or creativity that can be generated properly in this toxic relationship. And as the dystopia descends, maybe a few goals can cheer everyone up and instill some belief in the youth, especially the amazing sports people that Scotland has that just seem to lose their way in their teens because the belief's not there. See, it's shite being Scottish, and it's not because we're the lowest of the low, it's because we're good enough to nearly be good. We aren't one of those teams that get beat 6-0 every game. Although we occasionally, admittedly, we do get beat 6-0 sometimes. We are good enough to think we could be good. They do say it's the hope that kills you, but let's just live our life with a hope in our hearts for a wee bit, because the alternative is horrifying. This is the news on You Call That Radio. If you enjoyed this, then you may enjoy our Patreon or YouTube membership even more. And finally, let me know in the comments what your prediction for Scotland in the World Cup is. And we'll come back to this video after we do well, and we can look back and see if you were right or not. So, you know, you don't need to be too specific. You can vote, will we do well? Will we do okay? Or will we do shite? Vote below in the comments if you're watching it on YouTube. If you're listening to it on Spotify, you can vote as well.
You call that radio?
I just finished watching Sean Combs' The Reckoning on Netflix, so I thought I would just do a quick review about that. It's a documentary capturing the rise and fall of P. Diddy or Puffy or whatever you want to call the guy. It critiques him in depth for over 4 hours and 4 episodes. He's abusive, a shady businessman, and may allegedly have been involved in the death of 2 of the 90s biggest hip-hop superstars, Notorious B.I.G. and Tupac. Now, normally when someone as successful as this gets exposed, we need to try and separate the art from the artist. Well, the only good news is there is no artist here. He's a terrible rapper who used ghostwriters and ghost producers. He just got to the top, kind of by being the right place at the right time and by being a ruthless, soulless creature who was happy to rip off his friends. And that greed would be his downfall, as there's many moments captured by his own camera crew that he failed to pay. Despite boasting about being in the Billionaire Boys Club, he wouldn't pay some young camera people who were filming him right up until his court date. So the camera people owned the footage, and they've obviously sold it to 50 Cent for a very high price, I would assume. And the footage of him in hotel rooms just before he goes to court and where he gets jailed for 50 months with time spent. And I know that without checking, because it was repeated on the screen 8 times throughout. He went to court and was jailed for 50 months with time spent 8 times at the beginning and the end of each episode. And every time I seen that, I could almost hear the trademark laugh from the executive producer that is 50 Cent. Now, you're probably already aware of that. The executive producer is rival hip-hop star 50 Cent, who's currently the happiest I've ever seen him. He's touring all the various media platforms. Apparently, he did ABC because he heard that's the show that they, that's the channel that they have in the jail. So, he's having a good time. He's got a spring in his step, and he's laughing all the way to the bank. It's an unwritten rule that documentary makers in general should remain unbiased. In fact, when I did a media studies course at 16, I think that rule might even be not unwritten, but a written rule that documentary filmmakers should remain unbiased. But 50 isn't going to let little things like that concern them. This is a hit job, no doubt about it. But considering the sheer amount of evidence, testimony, and unseen footage that he's managed to unearth, I've got no complaints. I don't think anybody in P. Diddy's team wanted to go on the record. They were approached, but obviously they didn't want to be in a 50 Cent documentary. And his empire has crumbled. So there's nobody willing to go on the record in support of him. Especially since this might just be the tip of the iceberg. He might only have got 50 months so far with time spent, which was a very good deal considering he was facing life in prison. But I would be extremely surprised if he gets released in 2028. I'd actually be quite surprised if P. Diddy is still alive in 2028. He's got over 100 cases against him, with 7 pending, and that's before any of the whole murder and rap icons things gets reinvestigated, if it does. And not content with the brutal, and it is brutal, it's a brutal takedown of Diddy's reputation, 50 has also paid for the best lawyers for more people that are making accusations. He even made deals with Diddy's business partners. So there's very little, if any, business left for him to do and the chance that he does get out. In fact, the only way P. Diddy's going to get out of jail alive is if his old friend Donald Trump gives him a pardon, which he has said he is considering. But since the president is currently starting wars with his own allies in order to distract from the Epstein files, I think giving Diddy a pardon at this point in time would be bad optics, even for Trump. I suppose it'll boil down to if he's got enough money left to pay his way out, and if Trump can remain in power or alive long enough to get him out. Now, is 50 doing this for more morality, moral reasons? I don't know, but whatever it may be, 50 fell out with Diddy a long time ago. They fell out over a business deal involving 50 trying to take Mace from Bad Boy to G-Unit. There's been rap beefs going way back to 1999 when 50 Cent included him in his song How to Rob. And it's just been going back and forth, mostly just from 50 aimed at P. Diddy. But Diddy then went out with 50's baby mama as well. So 50 likes to, but for some reason 50 likes to point back to the time where Diddy offered to take him out shopping. That's his ground zero of their hate for each other. Whether that's true, I don't know. Whatever it may be, it might not be morality that's his end goal, but he has exposed a truly grotesque person and he's having the last laugh on his complete destruction. The full thing is completely biased, but his own camera footage from P. Diddy, his own camera crew, the footage they got is the real smoking gun in the room. Even if you were, for some reason, not to believe the countless victims, business partners, and colleagues who appear genuinely upset, recounting tales of being violated by this twisted demon, the footage of Diddy leaves him with nowhere to run. All he can do is pretend that he found God and try and buy his way out. And as someone who always claimed to have found God, I don't know if it works like that. Maybe you could say, no, I really found God this time. You know, there's a lot of Americans like that stuff. In fact, there's people in Britain that are liking that stuff now as well. You do a bad thing, you get a lot of bad accusations, and then you say you found God. It is the right-wing grift. So, but I'd be very surprised. I don't see a music career. Maybe a reality TV show. Who knows? Who knows? Meanwhile, for 50, he's just continuing to ascend in the film world. So not only has he got revenge, but he's also enhanced his career. And he's loving every minute of it. So in, you know, just to sort of, in conclusion, 50 is not the guy to beef with on any level. And Diddy is the epitome of late stage capitalism, style over substance, clout over skill, and money over loyalty. And that's why, in the end, nobody was there to stick up for him. The way he danced out on stage after his friend was shot dead was always weird to me. I never got the fascination with Diddy. And it seemed weird at the time, but looking back, it's insane that nobody called that out. I know there's that argument, you know, Erica Kirk style, everyone grieves differently, but it's just weird that nobody found it strange. He had too much power back then, though. He had too much power. And now, he doesn't. Hell mend him. This is the news on You Call That Radio. Let me know in the comments what you thought about Sean Combs, The Reckoning. Bye!
Yo, this is Charlie Tuna from Jurassic 5 live and direct here in Glasgow, Scotland, and You Call That Radio?
It's been a while since we had a film review on YCT Radio, but let's do it. No spoilers. I'm just back from watching a Scottish movie on the big screen called I Swear, and it's the best film I've seen all year. It might actually be the only film I've seen this year, but that does not negate the fact that this is really something special. It's uncomfortable, it's funny, sad, happy. I think everyone came out the pictures with red eyes and a smile. What a documentation on the cruelty and ignorance of the human species, yet also an inspiring reflection on all the best parts of humanity as well. The story set in Gala Shields, or Gala, as we call it. It's a town in the Scottish Borders. I've actually had some really good times there. Mac Arts, shouts to Mac Arts. We played a couple of shows there before, and everyone's dead nice. But aye, the true story, based on John Davidson, a guy with Tourette's syndrome, which, if you don't know, that causes vocal tics and physical twitches. And many of you may have seen him before on a documentary or two that was really famous, at least in Scotland. I remember one around the turn of the century. I think there's been a few, but Google tells me that John's Not Mad came out in 1988. And I just watched an interview a couple of weeks ago with John, where he says that he wants the film to raise awareness on Tourette's, and it's undoubtedly going to raise awareness on a global scale, and it's going to pick up stacks of awards, and deservedly so. I think the last review I did was a kneecap movie last year, and back then I told you go and see it, it will win awards, and this is no different. This is absolutely going to clean up, if there's any justice. It does everything that a good film should do. It's going to educate you. It's going to make you laugh. It's going to make you cry. It's going to make you angry. And if you watch any interviews of John, then you can see how well Robert Aramayo plays him. And also shout outs to Scott Ellis Watson, who plays the younger version of John. Peter Mullen's incredible, as always. He plays the community centre worker. Maxine Peake as Dot is outstanding. And Heather Davidson, magnificent as well, as the complex mother character. Just all the acting's top-notch throughout. Kirk Jones, director. Every scene seems so well put together. There's no filler. And it's just good to see Scotland on the big screen as well. Scotland very rarely gets the opportunity to make a film of this quality. And when it does, it's a beautiful thing to witness. No strange accents, no stereotypical cliches, no dumbing down the slang. It's, you know, we're used to, you know, there's a thing called the Scottish cringe because we're not used to hearing the Scottish accent on television or on film. And when there is a Scottish accent on television or on a film, it's usually the alcoholic, drug addict, wife beater stereotype, or it's the police guy, a detective or something. So it's just, and then when they try and do something else, it's usually a sort of fake American West End accent so that people can understand it. But I feel like this film doesn't have any of those pitfalls. It's telling a very unique story. And yeah, it doesn't dumb it down at all. It's just real. It feels real. Because it is real. It's actually mad that this is all a true story. And as I say, sometimes truth is stranger than fiction. I don't want to do a big deep dive into it because I don't want to spoil anything about it. So, no spoilers, I'll just leave it there. Go and watch the film, but prepare yourself for an emotional roller coaster. And let me know if you've seen it yet. I'd be interested to know what you think about it. But yeah, amazing. 5 stars from You Call That Radio for the film, I Swear. Magic. Well done, everybody involved, and yeah, well done, John, a remarkable man. Great stuff. Check it out. If you don't really start a shite Oasis tribute band, and out of respect for Liam and Noel, I'm gonna do my best to be really bad at it. I'm not here to compete. I don't want to steal the limelight. I don't really have the energy for a sold out world tour right now, and I think that level of fame is just not for me. It's not for me. So why do it then? Well, recently I came across an Instagram page about shite Oasis tribute bands, and it's called Shit Oasis Tribute Bands. And I can't stop watching it. I'm obsessed with it. And one day I want my band, my shite Oasis tribute band, to be on that page. And this isn't a joke. This isn't a dig at anyone. This is me setting myself a realistic goal. And I think we can all be guilty of being a little bit too ambitious.
And I don't see any problem with it at all. The only problem I've got is that the more I do it, I'll maybe start getting better at it. I don't want that. So I might just do it for one night only, just a shite Oasis band tribute act. The reason being is, when you watch the page, everybody's having fun on that stage, and they're probably getting paid more than my band. And people, you know, people always say, oh, it must be fun to be in a band, or they think it's fun to be in a band. And it is fun to be in a band for a while. But if you enjoy being in a band, which you probably will, then you're going to spend more and more time on it, and then you start getting better at things. You get better at things when you repeat the process. So the more you do things, you get better at. Normally. You're a bit underwhelmed sometimes with all the effort you put in. So these days as well, you're expected to become a social media expert, a video editor, and you're investing money. You know, you're just throwing money on merch, recording, rehearsal studios, on the assumption that you might get some of it back. So what's slowly happened is that you've just taken a fun hobby and it's turned into a job. In fact, it's a business, a small business. It's the music business, baby. So from, you start off as a work-shy musician, and you've inadvertently and accidentally got yourself a full-time job. You are the job. And the fun diminishes as you realise that you are, in fact, working. And you're not working for a lot of money. You wouldn't do any other job for these pitiful amounts. When you consider the anxiety, the stresses, the just making yourself vulnerable in front of an audience, and making yourself a valid target for anyone who just doesn't like what you do. And then you look at the shite Oasis tribute acts, and these guys are having fun. Forget about the musical ability. Some are better than others. Just forget about that for a second. It doesn't really matter. They're skipping all the usual stuff, like having to build a fan base or writing songs. Probably not even much or any rehearsals, because everybody in the band, anyone that's going to join an Oasis tribute band, already knows the Oasis songs. So you just skipped all that and went straight to main stages and sold out venues. And all you really need to do is just come up with a pun. Doesn't even need to be a good pun. In fact, the best tribute acts or the worst tribute acts have the worst names. You just need to have a pun based on the band name or one of their song names or their album names. It's actually quite fun even picking that name. It's just something that signals to the super fans that you're in town and you're going to be playing their favourite band's songs. And fans will turn up in their droves. They're going to turn up. They're going to sing along to every word you sing. The crowd is going to be singing back and showing love. They it's like watching wrestling or something. They want to believe that you are Liam Gallagher. There might be drunk old guys in the pub that genuinely think you are Liam Gallagher. You might think that you're actually Liam Gallagher if you do it right. If you believe, you might believe that you're Liam Gallagher. And this is purely Oasis tribute acts I'm talking about. I'm not talking about the other tribute bands. I've seen some tribute acts that I like. I've seen some that I didn't like. Something special and really different about being in an Oasis tribute band. Maybe it's because Liam's iconic and everybody can do an impression or a version of an impression. Everyone can do a version of an impression of Liam Gallagher. The audience knows what you're trying to do and who you're trying to be, the way you walk, what you wear, the way that you sing the words. So this is purely Oasis that I get this feeling that I would like to join an Oasis tribute band. So, yeah, just shout outs to all the shit Oasis tribute bands on Instagram for inspiring me to start my own shite Oasis tribute. No hate to anyone out there. There is no hate. This comes from a place of love. I feel love for it because I see that you're genuinely in the moment. You love it, you care for it, and you're probably making money from it without having to think too much. And I think that we could all just learn something from that. You don't need to start your own shit Oasis tribute band, but you could learn something about that. Work less, think less, have fun. Just walk on stage and pretend that you're a rock and roll star. And yeah, just dingy reality for a bit. Yeah, there's going to be more. I think this that Instagram page is going to get bigger because I think there's going to be more and more and more and more and more and more and more Oasis tribute acts coming through. As Oasis gear up for a second world tour announcement, I think there's going to be a lot of them. A lot of them about. I've seen people just saying, does anyone want to start it? I've seen it. You've got a whole new generation of people discovering Oasis. But I just want to also point out that I'm not talking about bands that make music that sounds like Oasis or frontmen that try and copy Liam Gallagher. I don't like that shit. I still hate that shit. And, you know, most small towns probably have a large percentage of people that want to sound like Oasis. They're making original music that rips off Oasis. I don't like that. I will never, ever like that. I'm talking about dressing up as Oasis and singing Oasis songs well or badly. It doesn't matter because the crowd will sing the rest of the songs anyway. It's about the atmosphere. You're creating the atmosphere. You're creating a big drunken sing-along. And I like that, but I don't like people that just copy the music. That I'll never like that. That's shit. That is shite. So, yeah. I'm just purely talking about the true rip-off merchants. So I'm showing love to the true rip-off merchants, the ones that just do Oasis songs and only Oasis songs. And yeah, I just thought I would say that. And let me know in the comments if you actually would come and see me and a few friends just for maybe one night only, maybe around about Christmas time. We'll just do a shite Oasis tribute night. And I promise we won't even practice. We'll just give it 110%. We'll just go for it. And we'll keep it biblical. Hope you all have a nice weekend and keep it biblical. And that's today's news. Like, subscribe, Patreon. You call that radio.
You call that radio.
This is the news on You Call That Radio. And today, we're talking about radio. There's a lot of things in this world getting worse. And sometimes it's deliberately managed decline. Other times it's incompetence. And it's usually obvious to me which is which. But with BBC Radio Scotland, it's making me wonder, is BBC Scotland trying to intentionally kill radio? Or are they just really good at making really bad decisions? If you haven't heard yet, they've axed Ian Anderson, Billy Sloan, Natasha Raskin-Sharp and Roddy Hart, and a major schedule revamp to introduce a new late-night, easy-listen programme with broader, more mainstream appeal to attract younger audiences. This obviously sparked public backlash and concern for Scottish music culture, the changes driven partly by financial pressures and aim for passive listening and hits first. Oh, it sounds bad, doesn't it? I was actually going to cover this last week, but I assumed with all the online outrage, they would change their mind, just like BBC did previously, by saving Six Music. Now, there has been a small U-turn in the sense that Roddy Hart has been given a new mixtape show, but it's just enough to say, you know, that they have been listening while not doing anything substantial about the bad decisions. So, easy listening, mainstream appeal, attracting younger audience, three red flags. Now, I agree that the station needs a radical overhaul, but they should be leaning into specialist programming and not trying to sound like every other radio station. I don't know if you've listened to radio recently, but it's not good. It's far from good. And I'm, you know, understand that it's a challenging time for radio, since everyone has on-demand apps in their pockets that can play almost every song ever made in a heartbeat. But surely the way forward is to niche down and use all the resources at their disposal to create something engaging and entertaining and memorable. And Radio Scotland has a big advantage over most radio stations, as they have licence money and they don't need to, and they're not allowed to run adverts. Now, just to clarify, You Call That Radio has no adverts by choice, but we have no budget, so it's not really the same thing. But the having no adverts thing gives them a competitive edge over most stations. I can't listen to radio stations with adverts. Nah, I can't do it. But I would listen to Radio Scotland if there was something good on. So, rather than pander to the lowest common denominator of music fan, they should be trying to attract true music fans who want to hear the next big thing, or they want to hear a deep cut from an old band that not many people have heard of. And by all means, throw some classics in there too. And, you know, lean into the folk trad music, but also expand the horizons and play something a little bit more challenging. So rather than easy listening, let's go for challenging. Just dumbing down in general will be the final nail in the coffin for Radio Scotland as a platform. Young people aren't going to tune in to listen to a new Taylor Swift song on Radio Scotland. Now, the person who's making the decision is Victoria Easton Riley, the new head of audio and events at BBC Scotland. And first of all, I don't know this person, but the fact that she used to work for Absolute Radio, owned by Bauer, should be worrying enough. Now, if you don't know, Bauer own all the radio these days. They bought everyone over, everything from Kiss Radio, Absolute Radio, Planet Rock, etc., etc., Kerrang. And then they bought over every local radio station in Europe, pretty much. So for Scotland, that looks like things like Clyde One, Fourth One, MFR, North Sound, TFM. Now, have you listened to Clyde recently? You know, I think she did work for the daytime Clyde programming as well. Now, Clyde is really bad. Sometimes taxi drivers inflict it on my ears. I always listen to Clyde, not by choice, maybe when I'm getting my hair cut, maybe when I'm in a taxi, but it's never consensual. It's presenters with zero power speaking in fake accents that I've never heard anyone say in real life. It's the same songs over and over again on a loop, interrupted every 5 minutes with really loud, fast, intrusive adverts. To me, it's pure torture. If there was a game show where you get 10 grand an hour to listen to it for 24 hours, I wouldn't last the first hour. In fact, I remember working in an office where I had to pretend that I needed a shite just because Robin Thicke's song, You Know You Want It, was getting its 20th spin of the day. Now, I don't like any song enough to listen to it on the hour, every hour. It's a really bad way of doing radio. I do not call that radio. Not at all. Now, this woman's obviously got massive experience with Radio 1's breakfast show, Clyde Daytime Radio, and Absolute Radio. And in that world, ratings are the name of the game. But not in Radio Scotland land. It's about creating unique programming and catering to a loyal base. You're not going to get young people starting to tune in by playing chart music. It's not going to work like that. All you're going to do is lose your middle-aged listeners who want to hear some folk music and stuff. If you want to attract a younger audience, then the best way to do that would be play the young bands that are coming through. Co-sign the underground acts. Carve a new target audience. You can't compete with every radio station on the planet. And why would you want to? You could make something that's unique to Scotland. And, you know, this podcast, if you're listening to the podcast or if you're listening to it on our YouTube channel, that was kind of designed as an alternative to the safe, dire, middle-of-the-road, offensive twaddle. Did I just say twaddle? I meant to say pish. That's me starting to think like a Clyde Radio presenter. And on that note, let radio presenters swear. Let songs have a swear word. It's 2026. Bands should be able to say shit. They should be able to say the word shit on a song at 11 o'clock. It's okay, the kids are not listening to Radio Scotland at 3 a.m. They should take a look at the diverse range of programming Sonny Govan hosts without any budget. And I love the way that Sonny Govan does it. You could have somebody in their 70s playing music from back in the day. You could have some hip-hop. You could have anything can happen in Sonny Govan. So that's a radio station that I think Radio Scotland could learn from. And, I mean, the only channel that the BBC radio that I listen to is Six Music. It can be really good, not always, but they're on the right path. And the only time I really listen to Radio Scotland's for the introduction show that Phoebe and Stephanie host, they take chances and play music based on merit and nothing else. And I love to see my friends, my peers get some airplay on FM radio. It gives them a boost and it introduces them to new fans as well. And, you know, my band, the Gyro Babies, has never been played in Radio Scotland ever, which is quite mad. But I also understand that we might not be the right sound for the station, so it doesn't bother me. In fact, my side project, Jack O'Trade, got a play once on Radio Scotland, which was a shock to me. And that night, my friends Dougie and Tam heard my tune in a taxi coming back from a Barra's gig, and they sent me a voice note of the song getting played on the radio and them kind of singing along. And that was a beautiful moment. See, I call that radio. That's radio. Scotland's got a rich history. By the way, the reason that I mentioned that the Gyro Babies hasn't been played in Radio Scotland, it's not because I'm pissed off. It's just to point out that I'm not moaning because my band's not getting played. My band doesn't get played anyway. It's not about that. I recognise that not every band's for every show. In the same way that since I've started running a station of sorts, I suppose it's kind of a radio station of sorts, then I understand that some people take it personally when I don't play them or I don't invite them on as a guest. So I realise that it's not as black and white as that. Sometimes it's just not the right fit. And I get that. But Scotland's got a rich history of music, comedy, poetry, and Radio Scotland should be just highlighting all of this, the past, the present, trying to create stars of the future. The reason that these songs chart on Clyde and Radio 1 is because Clyde and Radio 1 are playing them constantly. Why not have some sort of playlist? Not the same song on there every hour, please. But why not just get behind certain songs that and just play them more? That's how you make stars of the future. And as I said earlier, the folk trad scene, obviously very strong in Scotland. So lean into that. What about the jazz scene that's sort of born in Glasgow, that's taking London by storm right now? That should be all over it. Give airplay to the Scottish hip-hop scene, which is being systematically ignored. And why not underline the rock indie scene more? Work with the underground. Get more poets, get more comedians, get more actors involved. Why not stream live from the Barrow and Ballroom when a Scottish act sells it out? Why not work closely with independent festivals? Give them exposure and get the channel endless live sessions and behind-the-scenes interviews. Just forget about the ratings. Take some actual risks. Take risks on DJs, take risks on artists who have something to say or something fresh to offer. I'd rather have 100 engaged listeners than 10,000 people using my channel just as some background noise. Imagine what you call that radio could do with a budget. We have a Patreon, by the way, if you want to find out. If you're thinking about cancelling your licence, cancel your licence and get a Patreon, what you call that radio. I'm only joking. No, I'm not. I am not. But in conclusion, disappointing stuff from BBC Scotland. They need to think more like John Peel rather than Nick Grimshaw. Scotland has a never-ending supply of culture. We should be showing this off to the rest of the world. And copying Radio 1 or Clyde will signal the end. And maybe that's the point. Maybe the station costs too much money and they want it gone. That's really the only thing that makes sense here. This is the news on You Call That Radio. Like, subscribe. Bye. He has banned ticket touts or anyone for selling tickets for profit. And since then, ticket selling websites such as Viagogo and Hubstub have went into meltdown, crisis mode, and they're complaining and crying. And I'm finding it really hard to find a shred of empathy for any of them. And the argument is, what about the normal people who can no longer go to a gig and want to sell theirs? Well, it'll still be legal to sell your ticket to someone else if you can't make a gig. It just won't be allowed to profit heavily off of someone else's desperation for doing nothing. The devil's going to be in the detail, as always. I think there's additional booking fees that can be added, but will be capped and apparently reasonable. We'll see about that. Now, before the internet, I used to be happy to find a tout outside a show. Pay a wee bit extra to a human standing in the rain trying to get their hustle on. Nothing wrong with that, in my opinion. But since online ticket sales, things spiralled out of control because people could just sit in their house or their office desk and within 3 clicks buy up as many tickets as they can and then sell it on for a ridiculous profit, whether it's a concert, a sport event, comedy, whatever. For these people, it was just like putting a flutter on the horses. A wee bet on a greyhound that always fucking wins. Sometimes it would be, they would get even, sometimes it was 4-1. Sometimes they would get 20-1 on a wee greyhound. And it's usually the buyer. Well, many times the buyer either can't afford it or a rich guy buys it just because he's heard that other people like this music. So for people that aren't financially stable or for people that are true fans, they are priced out every time. And then that was bad, but then it gets worse because the corporations got involved and started doing this on an industrial scale. And that's when all these secondary websites came out the woodwork. And if you want to do a little bit of research on this, some of these secondary websites are very, very close indeed to the actual music promoters and the venues that are putting the gig on in the first place. It's very shady business. And within seconds of something selling out, you would find hundreds, maybe even thousands, of tickets available on Viagogo or the likes or StubHub or whatever. And you can then buy the same ticket that was £30 10 minutes ago, and now you're paying for it for £400. The game has been rigged for a long time, and it's rigged in the favour of greedy bastards that exploit true fans of live music, comedy, theatre, sports, whatever they can get their greedy paws on. And I'm seeing certain journalists warn us about this all backfiring and driving ticket sales underground. Good. Good. To the Observer and the other publications, I say I hope it drives it underground. I would rather get ripped off by a dodgy geezer who's been standing outside in the rain and he looks me in the eye as he doubles the price, and then hopefully we negotiate it so it's less than double the price, obviously. But I'd rather do that than give one more penny to these faceless, corrupt leeches who turn genuine FOMO, that's the fear of missing out, by the way, turning that FOMO into endless financial gain at no risk whatsoever. And while we're talking about all this stuff, now's maybe a good time to bring up the subject of dynamic pricing. Let's ban that too. Would it be so radical to suggest that Stevie Boy has the same chance as Hugo of going to the same event for the same price? It's now danger money is involved with the fines, and that means these corporate landlords of the music industry will have to walk away because they don't want to get into any trouble. They pay accountants so that they can evade tax legally. These people don't want to get into trouble. They don't want to have any risk whatsoever. Shitebags, basically, shitebags. So they'll go away, stop investing in these arsehole companies, and focus on their main hobbies, which is probably exploiting private tenants, buying water wells from third world countries, and investing in weapons companies. All the favourite things they can still do without any risk that gives them lots of money for sacrificing their moral fibre. Ruthless, soulless, heartless twats that wouldn't understand art if you spray-painted their BMW with a mural of McTominay's overhead kick. Why are the only people that seem to make money out of the music industry have no knowledge about music? Fuck them all, fuck them all, fuck them all. This is the news on You Call That Radio. This is the bit where most people would ask you to like, comment, and subscribe, but that's something I would never do. Bye.
You call that radio?